This is the McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. I'm Kale McCann.
And I'm Jamie Morrow. We are professional dog trainers, members of Agility Team Canada, and together we've been teaching dog agility for nearly 20 years.
Some nights after teaching classes, we'll spend hours talking about training, about our goals, and also some of the challenges we're facing and what we're going to do to conquer them.
And that's exactly what we're going to do in this podcast. Whether you're new to agility or competing at a world-class level, we're excited to have you listen in on our conversation.
So let's head to the line. Hello again. Episode 6.
Whoa.
We're on a roll.
Yep, we are.
Yep. We got the wine back with us.
Cheers.
Clink. And we're talking about another great topic. I think we think all of our topics are great.
Of course we do.
That's the great thing about a podcast. You just talk about what you want to talk about. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about training and trialing with multiple dogs in the sport of agility. And this is something that both you and I have endless experience in. And
you more than I.
I'm a little over the top in this department. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. But I think it's going to be an interesting one because I get asked a lot, actually, about people who have multiple dogs and what to do if they're like, most commonly they ask like, my dogs are so different. What do I do when they're so different? Like, it can be really challenging. So we thought we would talk a little bit about training with multiple dogs when you're trialing like at competitions and kind of what that looks like, but then also like training and living with multiple dogs, because when you have multiple dogs and you're training and just like maintaining and exercising and all of the other things that go into having a high level agility dog, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Like, and it doesn't even have to be a high level agility dog. It can be a retired agility dog.
Oh yeah. We love the retired folk. They take a lot of time.
Yeah.
So just to give you just maybe some backgrounds, kind of know where we're coming from. How many dogs would you say, what's the most dogs that you've run? Two? Have you ever run three?
No.
Did you ever run like Wink, Newton, and Lulu?
No.
Oh, really? Or Batman?
Batman.
And Lulu and Wink?
Yep.
Yeah, so three.
But short.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. Sorry, a wine pause.
How many dogs have you trialed all at once?
I think for quite some time, there was quite a long time where I ran four dogs, not super long. And then for basically forever, three dogs.
Yep.
And always three different dogs. And like one dog would retire and then I would still have like three on the go. So often I was training four, but like competing with three. And
Same jump height or?
Nope, different jump height. So two in the same jump height, one in a lower jump height. It actually would switch up because I've had so many different breeds of dogs. Mm-hmm. So it would switch up. But I will say this, after doing that for so long, and then now I only run one dog and I only train one dog, I'll never, ever go back to running like more than two dogs ever again. Like, that's just not my jam. And if it's your jam, power to you, but it's not my jam. And I'm going to talk about why.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about why. But anyways, we'll talk about trialing first, because I think there's more to say. Actually, there's lots to say about trialing, but there's more to say about training and about living. But so we'll talk about some of the advantages and disadvantages of having multiple dogs at trials, because I think there's lots of pros and cons to them. And in most cases, I think it's more pros than there are cons. Mm-hmm. I think it does add a different element of challenge when the dogs they run very different from one another, or absolutely, maybe they're in. Do you think it's easier to run dogs that are in the same jump height or two different jump heights?
I think it's more on their personality and their character, their style.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you run them in two different jump heights, typically they'll have like more time.
And it depends on what jump height though, too. Like you know, the 20 inch jump height, there's usually, it's a huge jump height class. So there's lots of waiting time. Mm-hmm. But if you're jumping a dog that's jumping 12 or 16.
Yeah.
And two of those.
Yeah, that can be hard. Mm-hmm. What can be difficult is if you don't have a lot of time between your dogs. Like, I always found that a really big challenge, because you don't have time to, like, mentally prepare, physically prepare.
And warm up your dogs properly as well.
Or cool out. Yeah. Like, sometimes, like, how many times have we, like...
had to trade off.
I don't know how we would have done it if we didn't have each other there, or, like, somebody else on our crew to be like, hey, can you walk this dog out? Because I have to, like, run in, like, three dogs.
Can you go get, like, switching off dogs? Can you go get this dog?
Yeah. And then... Do you remember the one in only competition that I quit because of running multiple dogs because the order of the classes was so horrible and one was late and blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh. And you're supposed to be in two different rings at the same time.
At the same time. And I was like, you know what? Like my dogs were not benefiting because I was just not there because I was so irritated with how disorganized everything was.
Yeah.
But then I knew that I was in a shitty mood.
And you were able to shut it down though and decide it was beneficial for you.
I shouldn't say that quitting. I quit, but it was the right
decision.
Oh yeah. I was like not in
and
the
you
right
didn't
mind.
Regret it.
No,
after.
That's because I spent the rest of the afternoon having some wine, cheering on my friends, frolicking in the fields with my dogs. I was like, gosh, why don't I do this more often? This is way better. I think it's important to know when you're pulling the plug, but I feel that's a bit extreme. But anyways, let's talk a little bit about the advantage of running multiple dogs, because there is a ton of advantages. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you see?
I think that it can take the pressure off the more competitive dog. Mm-hmm. If you're bringing up an inexperienced dog and you don't take it too seriously, you can, you know, go in and have some fun with the inexperienced dog. And then when it comes time to run your more experienced dog, it's like, huh, this is easy.
Yes, like wearing an old pair of shoes. Yeah, it is nice, especially too, if you have the opportunity to run multiple dogs on the same course. I know I always used to like wish for like one dog to get in the running order before another, because I just knew, like, I always liked running Funky first because she was like just so comfortable. And then like younger dogs after that, I'd be like, well, at least I've run the course once. I kind of know like how it feels and can kind of go out and do it with the second dog. It's way easier when they run similar for sure. But
I was a bit opposite. I liked running my inexperienced dog first to kind of get the jitters off. And then when
That's
I was like,
looking at it.
Oh, when I ran my more competition dog, I was like, oh, I know where I'm going. Yeah. It feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Took the pressure off of my competitive dog.
Yeah, I like that. Uh-huh. I like that a lot. Yeah, I think that's really good. I think taking the pressure off the competitive dog is a good thing to speak of. And I don't know about you, but when you walk a course, like when you're at a trial and you're running multiple dogs and you're walking a course, do you find that you gravitate towards walking the course for like a particular dog?
I do.
Do you? Who is it?
It was always my competitive dog.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it might have been just a part of the course that I think that one dog might struggle with more than the other, though,
too. That's a good thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that this is, like, maybe bad to say, but sometimes I would end up walking for, like, my more, I don't want to say exciting dog, but, like, the dog that, like, I had to, like, I was more nervous about running, I guess, because it was a little bit more unpredictable. So, like, when I would walk the course and I would run Funky and then I would run a younger dog, I think I would gravitate towards running the younger dog because I had to, like, think more about what I needed to do on course. Where Fun, I just found, like, I kind of just knew. Like, it was just more comfortable. And this was obviously later in our career together to begin with. But I find sometimes, I would like start walking the course with one dog in my mind. And then like halfway through, I would switch and I'd be like, wait a second. No, this is not where I would ever be standing if I was running this dog. So I was actually talking about this in my online agility course the other day. We had a live stream and we were talking about different things, and somebody had asked about running multiple dogs. And I had said that like one thing that I would have to consciously do is I would like step out and be like, okay, I'm walking the course with like this dog in mind. And I would have to stay focused on that through the entire walkthrough, like making sure my timing was right, or like, would I run into the pocket with this dog or not with this dog, or does this dog have a running contact and this dog doesn't, like, it's because it changes. Mm-hmm. And then I would circle back and start the course again and be like, okay, now I'm walking for this dog. And that was really, really helpful. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I remember doing that with you and some of our other people as well, where like you would be walking and I'd be like, Jamie, are you walking for like this dog? And then you'd be like, this dog. And I'd be like,
You're not there.
Yeah. I don't think you'd be there with that dog. And then anyways, you'd be like, okay, watch me do it now. Like a kid and a mom, like with like, you know, when your kids are like at sports classes,
you're
like,
look at me,
watch me do this. That's how we were.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. But what's the days of trialing?
But what's challenging about it is that some dogs had more skill in certain areas than others. So I had to change my handling in some courses.
Yes.
Because one dog was just more inexperienced, or it was, I knew that they would knock a bar here or not collect as well if I did this.
Yes.
So
yes,
sometimes I was running the same course, but very differently.
Very differently. Yeah. That would even come up too if you're doing like games classes, because like when you need to know like how many obstacles your dog can do. Like I remember running like walking gambles courses for the big dogs and then walking gambles courses for the littles.
Yes.
And how many had to change this.
Like, and cut out obstacles because it just wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that all takes experience and time. And I think some of the preparation things that we did anyways ahead of time is we were pretty confident about like how many obstacles our dogs could do per second, for example. So if we were trying to give ourselves a baseline for like games classes, we would have a pretty good idea of what those numbers would be in going in. And I think that was really helpful for like designing courses. But for like jumpers and for standards and things like that, a lot of it was like really like walking the course, not just like walking it to memorize it. We would do that, but then like walking it in, implementing the timing. Where were we going to look, you know, use their name? When were we going to give a collection cue? We would actually rehearse those things like to a T. We're actually going to do another podcast in the future on our list of things we want to do about like course walking, because we could literally talk about course walking for an entire podcast. But there are certain things that we would do to make sure that we would internalize the timing so that we could kind of practice it a little bit. Hence why sometimes we would say like, you must be walking for this dog, because we could tell based on body language or when we were giving out cues or whatever, even though the dog wasn't even in the ring. And I think that's really cool because it really makes you appreciate the differences between the dogs, but then also how you need to mentally get where you need.
You have to shift.
Yeah. And I think that I love the next tip, which is like mentally, are you able to focus on multiple dogs in a day? So, you know, there is a lot of mental focus that goes into running multiple dogs and then being able to like switch to what your dogs need. So a few podcasts ago, we talked a little bit about like high tribe dogs. And in a portion of it, we spoke a lot about like pregame, like what to do before
the
you go
set up.
Yeah, before you go into the ring. And I think that this is really important when you're running multiple dogs, especially if your dogs need different things from you. So like if you're running one dog, like do you need to get like hyped up? And, you know, were you just sitting in your lawn chair for like 3 hours? And now, like, remember we would have to run the border staffies and we'd have to be like, okay, like, whoa, let's
here we
get
go.
Crazy. Because like you had to be there and then we would run
and
the border.
And then when you run more dogs, you mentally, you get more tired.
Oh, yes. I do not. That's the thing that I don't miss. Like, this is the first time
there's
ever.
Not as much downtime.
No. And you have to be on and on. Like, I remember running all of those dogs and I would be running anywhere from like 25, sometimes like 35. 40 runs in a day if I just was crazy and I entered all four dogs and like all of the I would never do that now. Like I cap out at about like four runs. Like when we do UKI and there's like six runs in a day, I'm like, oh, really? You know, do we have to do that? Like, it's just too much.
It is a lot.
And I don't know why. I don't know why I'm worse at it now. Maybe it's just because I say I'm worse and then like you are what you say. But yeah, having that many runs in a day and like having to like be present, it is a real challenge. And you have to figure out how to make that work for you. For me, I don't know like what I think you and I are probably very similar in everything that we do. But for me, I found it much easier to like literally turn off between runs and not think about it. So like once I was like done that, boom, 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 put it away, check out, be social. And then like I needed a certain amount of time to like get back in the flow. But I have a hard time like lasting all day if I'm thinking about what I'm doing all day.
Yep.
And I know other people are different than that. But for me, I have to veg out a little bit in order to like then be able to turn it back on. But I can't turn it back on a million times in a day. There are certain times where I go to turn back on and it is just not there anymore.
Yeah.
Which is what happened at that one trial. I was like, I'm done. Like, yeah, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But do you do the same?
Yeah, I do. But if I'm running one dog, what I initially struggled with running multiple dogs is they ran so differently.
Yeah, they did.
So I was running, if I ran with Wink, I'm running into everything. I'm running like a wild woman, screaming at every obstacle, saying it. Yes. And then I ran Grin and did the same thing and it was not good.
No.
I dropped lots of bars. It was very chaotic. She does not need that. I needed to be calm. So mentally before I go in, I had to shift gears where I had to be hyped up to run Wink and, you know, kind of be into it. And I had to get her into it. And then when I ran Grin mentally, I had to be zen.
Yeah.
So
I think that's where like developing like the different types of routines for your dogs can help you to get into that proper mental mm-hmm. place because of, you know, maybe the exercises that you do before you go in or whatever it is that can help you like find wherever you need to be for that dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be a challenge as well. I think the other thing that can be a challenge when you run multiple dogs, and I know it took me years to figure this out, is recovering after like you run your first dog and it doesn't go well.
Oh.
And then you have your next dog in like 10 or 12 dogs mm-hmm. and being able to like set that shit run aside and be like, okay, like I can't let that affect me for my next dog yeah. because maybe the next dog is the more competitive dog and like they've just
or
had
they need
three
more
cons.
From you mentally. Yeah,
exactly. That was a big challenge. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that running multiple dogs made me learn that faster because if you didn't figure it out, then the second dog would just have a crappy run, too. And then your next run would be bad. Your next
it's
one would be bad.
Snowball.
Because you're just focusing on the negative. You really do need to learn to say, like, okay, I'm going to have my, like, woe is me moment, and I'm so disappointed about this.
But put it away.
But put it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we talk about the Bitter Barn?
Oh, the Bitter Barn.
This is a good – we'll have to talk about the Bitter Barn more than once if we do, like
– I think we did bring it up once already.
So the Bitter Barn is this thing that Jamie and I developed years and years ago where we're allowed to go to wherever we decide the Bitter Barn is. It could be like in our tent. It could be
car.
In our car. And you go without your dog. So no dogs allowed. And you're allowed to go and you're allowed to be as disappointed and as angry and upset as you possibly want for like an allotted time. And then the moment you exit the Bitter Barn,
it's done.
Over and you're not allowed to speak of it again.
Mm-mm.
And it is important that your dog doesn't go because they can't see you like that.
No.
And
that you have a friend to tell you to go to the barn and take your dog.
Can I have your dog? Do you need to go to the barn? Yes, I need to go to the barn. Yeah, but it was because
and
like
that though, naming it also kind of took the pressure off.
It made it funny.
Of the disappointment.
Yes. Yes, and that was really important for running multiple dogs because like we're both super competitive, which is why we're great at agility, and that's awesome. So when something doesn't go well, it's not a bad thing that we were that disappointed.
No.
But what's bad is when you
that let it carry over.
Yeah, and it reflects to your dog or it reflects the people around you or mm-hmm. whatever it might be, and that's not
because
fair.
That mood could also affect your, you know, your friends and the people that you're
yeah.
trialing with too.
We need to write that down.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good podcast thing yes. too, like dynamics of people at a trial or whatever, like that's a whole other yeah. thing. But yeah, no, the Bitter Barn. The Bitter Barn's great, and it's been very helpful over the years for being able to pick yourself up and then, you know, being, you know, showing up properly for your next dog for mm-hmm. sure. But that's definitely a challenge. And then I think we kind of talked about this as well, but like, course walking and running the dogs and being able to make, different choices depending on the dog that you're running. And then with that also comes expectation. So being realistic about the different expectations mm-hmm. that you have for different dogs, because it could be that one's a lot older and more experienced than the other dog. Or maybe you have two dogs that are a similar age, but one's got different training or just has better ability or whatever the reason is. You do need to be able to make sure that you're not putting unrealistic expectations on dogs and then them falling short and then you being disappointed or whatever it might be. I know speaking from personal experiences, I had dogs years ago. I had a border collie named Slice who was an exceptional dog and every way, probably the greatest dog I've ever owned in my life. She was amazing. And so she had a lot of success. And then when I got Funky, and I mentioned this in another podcast, I had all of these big dreams, these big aspirations for her. And I was like, she's going to be like my next amazing dog. And then we had struggled and it wasn't like really working out that way. And I just remember being so disappointed that like, you know, it just things weren't going the way that I had envisioned it mm-hmm. going.
Which
and
probably prevented you from moving forward.
It absolutely did because yeah. the moment I pulled my head out of my ass and was like, okay, like this is the dog that I have. Like, what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to fix this? And I separated the dogs and I focused. Okay, Slice did her thing. She's great. She's wonderful. Woo, great. And then Funky was like, hey,
this is what she needs for me.
This is what she needs. This is how I need to be for her. And once I was able to like not really worry about like the outcome, then things just started coming together. But yeah, I think that for me, that was like the hardest flip flop between two dogs. Mm. Or also then running like really small dogs. That was also challenging because mm-hmm. they're just like completely different.
Yeah. I did. Yeah. I had two small dogs in the smallest jump height class. Yes. And sometimes I was running like back to back, and they give you like some time to kind of rest and recoup.
Get the oxygen tank out.
But it's exhausting, and it's challenging because you're like running to get one dog and putting another dog away. Yeah. That switchover was tough for sure.
Yeah. So I do think that there's lots of advantages of running multiple dogs at trials. I think that I think it'll be fun one day to have multiple dogs mm-hmm. and not just, because I think sometimes with one, like I only run one dog right now, as you do mm-hmm. you. We're not running right now because there's absolutely no trials happening, but there is a lot of sitting around much more than I'm used to. But I think in one case, like I'm, because of coaching, I end up being busy and like interacting with people mm-hmm. all day long. And I think that if I was running multiple dogs and being needed as a coach, I think that would probably hinder my competition, and I would have to like probably work on that a little bit more. So there's not many times where I'm like feeling bored, like twiddling my thumbs, like I have nothing to do. But I think that running two dogs for me personally would be like the ideal situation.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But I like running one dog too, though.
I like running one dog, and I like running one dog and then training a young dog.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have to agree with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think right now, well, I have Euchre right now, but I'm not training her for agility. So I'm training her for lots of like just obedience and life stuff. So like, that's nice, cause I can do that while you're training your young dog. But, and also B is like, she's four now, so.
It takes the pressure off her too.
Yeah. She's like kind of, I wouldn't say that her training's done or something like that, but
she's more seasoned.
Yeah. I'm like maintaining her now mm-hmm. and I'm just waiting for a competition to come along that I can maybe enter at some point when all my training's going to go out the woohoo because I'm not doing anything with her. But anyways, okay. Is there anything else you want to say more about trialing?
No, I think kind of getting into it now with training.
Let's get
dog.
Into it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about training specifically, because we kind of actually were just talking about that.
Yeah.
And just like living with multiple dogs. I think that, you know, when for us, like we train agility at a very high level. We're both world team members, and when we get a new dog, our aspiration is to like
be competitive.
Yep, be competitive and be on the world team. However, that's not like the only thing that we're focused on when we have dogs.
No.
Because when you have multiple dogs, like for example, my husband's in dogs as well. So between the two of
mine
us.
Mine is not.
Yours is not. No.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, he's dog savvy.
Yes.
But my dog. Hopefully he's not listening to this. Wait a second. He's editing. Sorry, honey. I love you. My husband is a dog, professional dog trainer as well. So we have six dogs between the two of us. I have four. He has two. And so it is easier when you have two people that like kind of know what's going on, and that's helpful. Except his two dogs are over the age of 13, so they're mm-hmm. not doing anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And my dogs, I have a 13-year-old, 10, 7, and 4. So the 4-year-old is really the only one that I'm training, and mm-hmm. all of the other dogs, though, they all require stuff. So like one thing that I find,
you still don't get more time.
No, mm-hmm. that's the thing that's difficult, because all these people that just get dog after dog after dog after dog, like,
how do you have the time?
What do you do with mm-hmm. all of these dogs? Like, how do they possibly get the individual attention and stuff that they really need?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, taking multiple dogs to a high level, like if I wanted to do agility at the level that I want to do it at, I don't think at this point in my life, with all the hundreds of bajillion things that I have on the go, I couldn't do that with more than two dogs. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that they would ever reach the potential they would need, because I just wouldn't have the time that it requires to compete at the level that sure. I want to compete at. But taking that aside, and you and I talk about this all of the time, if you take training agility out completely off the table,
uh-huh.
there's still 100 friggin' other things that you got to do with the dogs on a regular basis to like keep them exercised. Like I want Funky to live forever. Mm-hmm. I was like walking her yesterday, and I started to notice that, like, she's 13 and a half years old. I started to notice like the muscle in her back end was like, it's like not really there as much anymore. And I was like, oh oh my God,
what can I do
yeah,
to make
what
it?
What can I do? Like, do I need to start doing exercises with her? Like,
swimming.
Oh my God.
She likes swimming.
You know, like your mind just starts going. And now like, I'm just like totally focused on that because like mm-hmm. you look at all of the dogs and even though you're not doing agility.
Their needs are different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking. What does their body look like? What do their teeth look like? What do their nails look like? Like, it's just nonstop. Are they getting mentally stimulated enough? Are they getting affection enough? Like, it's like, I don't even have kids. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, you have kids and dogs that you have to do. Mm. But, like, there's so much that goes into it. And I'm sure we're probably on the extreme side of, like, what we do with our dogs. Like, our dogs are our family pets. But they're also, like, they have the best life
they
in
do.
The entire world, for sure. But I just find when you have multiple dogs and you have
it's
to do
more work.
All of those things on yeah. top of it.
And it doesn't
so
stop
hard.
When they, you know, when they retire and they're not doing mm-hmm. agility anymore. I have a 16-and-a-half-year-old Papillon that is fiery as ever and still
he sure is.
And he still needs to be mentally stimulated. Otherwise, he's not as easy to live with.
Yeah,
like his energy is very different. So, we're walking regularly. Like, it just because, you know, he's older and retired, it doesn't mean that he's sitting on the couch
yeah.
all day long, because that's not the case with him.
Yeah. Multiple dogs are hard. Multiple mm-hmm. dogs are very, very hard. Now, the training, that's an interesting thing. So one thing that I have personally found with training when I was training multiple dogs is I would have a certain order that I would train them in.
Me too.
Based on like my energy level.
And the dog's ability and how old they are and to preserve them yeah. and what they can maintain.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. the way that I would kind of think about it is the dogs that required the most of me mentally or physically sometimes, I would do first
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to make sure that I was like in the best mood or the most energetic or whatever it might be. And then I would just kind of change from there, or I would switch between them as well. But like I found when I was doing a lot of training with Funky, she needed me to be like up
on
a lot. So if I trained three dogs or whatever, and then I did something with her, I'm kind of tired by then. Not that I would be like miserable or anything, but I just wouldn't.
You didn't have the same
high.
Energy.
Yeah. And I found that wouldn't impact, that would impact her negatively. So I would try to switch things up, or like what we trained, I would also switch up to mm-hmm. make sure that it worked to the advantage of the dogs and me, of course, but also of the dogs.
What
but
they
you did the same. Yeah.
I generally trained my,
I love how I asked Jamie whether she did the same. I literally know every
she
answer
knows.
She's going to say, because we just talk nonstop.
I'm training a puppy now, and then I have a competitive dog. So my training sessions generally start out with my puppy,
mm-hmm.
And I'll train something where I need most of his physical energy, and then I'll cool him down, and I'll bring out my more competitive dog, and I'll do whatever, you know, is kind of there with her.
Yeah.
And then I'll put her away, and then I bring my puppy out again.
For second session.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good plan.
Yeah, because I want to reserve my competitive dog too. She has the skills behind her, and it's more maintenance now. So mm-hmm. I don't need to be, you know, running her so as much as previous, because she yep. has the skills.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of thinking about it. That's what we had put here is if one dog's more challenging than the other, who's better to train first? Like, do you go for the challenging dog
yes.
first, or do you go for the less challenging dog first? I think it just depends. I think you can switch it up
well,
depending
yeah.
on how you feel.
It depends. It does depend on my mood. Sometimes if I'm coming from work and I need a minute, I might train the easier one
go
first.
Go to the easy dog.
Yes, and then yeah. kind of get into it and then bring the challenging one
yeah,
out.
Absolutely. For sure. The other thing that I think is important to think about is, you know, when you have multiple dogs, or say you have one dog and you're thinking about getting another dog, or you have a second dog and like you're training it for agility, you want to also remember that that you don't necessarily want to assume that your second dog is going to be like your first, especially if you have two of the same breed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just make sure. And we just did a podcast that two episodes ago, I guess it would be now, on like training young dogs. And we focused on like 6 months and under, because we have lots to say about dogs of other ages, of course. But I think what happens is you really need to take the time to like learn about what that second dog is like, and then decide what things you're going to do similar, and then what things you need to change mm-hmm. based on the new dog that you have. And we often sort of joke about like people having like the second dog syndrome. So they either just like all of their dogs make the same mistake. So they, whatever they do with this dog, they end up doing with the next dog, because it's just kind of what they do. Or they overcompensate. So they're like, okay, like I've overcompensated. I've been like, okay, this dog needs like I want my dog to have like a better dog walk than this. So then the next dog, you like train the dog walk obsessively because you don't want to like have what you had there. But then sometimes you can like take it too far. Uh-huh. So I think you also just need to make sure that if you do have multiple dogs that
you know the dog that you have.
Yeah. And then be able to adapt and don't just assume mm-hmm. that everything's going to be the same.
No, because it's not. Because mm-mm. even if it's a similar breed, they're all going to bring different challenges mm-hmm. or, you know, things might be easier in some ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, often most people who have a second dog, it ends up being better than the last because you learn from every yeah. dog that you get. But in some cases, if people aren't able to adapt, they end up just having the same problems again because they just think, okay, well, I did it this way. So now I'm going to do that way again. I'm going to do it that way again. So you have to just make sure with dog training and in agility training, but dog training in general, it's really a good idea to make sure that you're open to like change and like switching things up a little bit because that's
No
dog is the same. And mm-hmm. you do need to be able to grow based on what you did before. I know we have a good friend of ours that's one of our instructors as well, Steve, and he was so cute the other day. He was training his one dog to have a running, he's training his young dog to have a running contact. And he tried training that with his older dog, like way, way, way back when. And somewhere along the way, he messed up and switched. Yeah, he had to go back to a stop contact. And so the other day he was doing something with the A-frame and I was helping him. And he was like, he's like been at the same stage for like ever. Steve, I love that I'm talking about this. I don't know if you're listening or not, but he's been at like the same stage. So, and I haven't like trained with him forever. And I was watching him and I was like, why are you still like on that step? Like, let's get going. And he's like, well, I'm kind of scared to like move forward because
this is where
somewhere along this time period is when like the other one went wrong. So like, I just want to like make sure that like mm-hmm. I don't do that again. And anyway, so we talked about it and we worked through that, but it did get me thinking like that probably happens
impactful
to a lot of people mm. because they're like, okay, like I don't want to mess this up. And then you end up like doing the same progression over and over and over again, worried that you're going to like make a mistake when really you have to just know that you just need to move forward and then recognize
different dog.
And then
yeah.
you have go more, back if you need to or
more
whatever.
Training under your belt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's just sort of interesting. We have a good question here.
Oh,
what is the perfect number of dogs to have in your household and to train, I guess. I don't know if that's the same question or two different questions.
This is a hard question because the dogs age so differently.
I know. But with smaller dogs, they
yes,
last.
Yes. Yeah. I would say three. I would like a retired dog, a competitive dog, and a dog in training.
Mm-hmm. I think
I have four.
Yeah. I have six. Well, actually, I have seven right now, but one's not staying. I would say three or four. I think that it would be nice to have like two dogs to train. I don't think I would want to have three dogs to train again, like actively train.
I find two's enough.
Yeah, I think two's definitely
especially
enough.
Especially when you have a puppy in the training because mm-hmm. they just need so much more training. And I'm not just talking about agility.
Yeah.
Like they need more training in
basic
life
yes. training. Yeah, uh-huh. yeah, yeah. And I also think about other things like, this is so stupid, but like traveling in the car or like going camping or like going in hotels. The second the numbers start to go up, like your workload, it's
more.
Just so mm-hmm. much more to look after and care for all the dogs. Or like when we go away, like trying to find like
someone to watch the dogs.
Yeah. It's a lot. And you have to just sort of work around those things. But I would say three or four for me being a professional dog trainer who gets to take my dogs to work with me every single day. I think that would be good. If I wasn't in that case, I think I would only want two dogs mm-hmm. or three dogs. I would love to get to four dogs, but I also don't want any of my dogs to die. So
yeah,
it's a hard thing, but I think
having multiple dogs, though, it takes the pressure off of the dogs because then you're not overworking them. It's more balanced in how much time you're providing each dog. Yeah. Like you're able to do that a little bit more. I also find that when you have a dog in training, for me anyway, it gives me a little bit more passion to want to train because things are so new and different and you're not sure where things are going. You know, there's challenges, absolutely. But it kind of refreshes you a little bit more.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Like, I think I'm sort of at that stage with B right now. Like, I don't really have anything that I have to train. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, like, I don't feel as encouraged to, like, go over and just go to the arena a bunch of times a week and train. Like, I would kind of rather just, like, go hiking with her and, like, spend time with her in other ways because I'm also, there's no competition, so I'm not preparing for anything. So I'm sure that's a major factor. But I think you're right. Like, on the flip side, if you have somebody, if you have only one dog that you're competing with, I think that sometimes we're putting so much focus on one dog that also physically, that's
it's hard,
really hard on the dog. So having a second dog that you can kind of balance things out with, I think can be extremely beneficial for the older dog as well, both physically and mentally, for mm-hmm. sure. I think multiple dogs is really helpful, but I think that there's a certain number in which you then start to become a crazy person. Like, I think there's a certain number that if you don't have help or you don't have all the time in the world, I do think the dogs, I don't want to say suffer, that's too negative, but like you're not able to take each dog and max them out
because to their full potential.
Yeah, because there's just not enough time to do that. And everybody's different. And I think it also depends what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very lucky. I'm a professional dog trainer. I do this full time. You're not. I mean, you're a professional dog trainer, yes, but this is not your full time job. So you have, and you also are a mom. So you have like a bunch of things to juggle. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it has to do with lifestyle. And like what Absolutely. You're doing as well. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the moral of our story?
I don't know. What do you think it is? How many dogs should you have?
Yeah. I think the moral of the story is that it is great to have multiple dogs.
There's benefits.
In agility. I think that there's probably more benefits than there isn't, but I think you got to do it right.
Yeah.
And don't just go out and buy another dog and be like, I'm going to have all these dogs do agility. Like, you got to do it right.
You have to be honest with yourself on what you are able to manage in your own life personally and what mm-hmm. you have going on.
Mm-hmm. And also, what are your expectations? Mm-hmm. And also remember that, like, once you're done agility, there's still, like a kabillion years that you have the dog.
Yeah.
And what does that look like for you? Like,
and for the dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
That was a good one.
It was a good one.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we're gonna put a wrap on that and we'll see you in the next one.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to our McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about us, check out the links in the show notes below. On that note, happy training.